Blog Talk Radio.
What's going on, everybody? This is the one and only, the nationally respected, the locally appreciated, your gracious host, William Powell. We've got a fantastic show tonight featuring on-camera coach Brenna McDonough. But first, let's get to this week's entertainment news. Let's take a look at the top five broadcast programs among those 18 to 49. Number one on NBC was Super Bowl 46, was a 40.5 share. Number two at NBC was Super Bowl 46 post-game show, with a share of 30.1. Number three on NBC was The Voice, with a 16.3 share. And number four on Fox was American Idol, with a 6.0 share. And again, on Fox, number five was American Idol, with a 5.5 share. I've got here the top five cable programs among those 1840 to 49. Number one was the MTV Jersey Shore Season 5. Number two on the History Channel was Pawn Stars. Number three was on the History Channel, Pawn Stars. Number four, USA Network, WWE Wrestling. And number five on the USA Channel, WWE Wrestling. I've got here a submission call from the CTAM Educational Foundation. CTAM Educational Foundation is accepting diversity fellowships. They're accepting applications now through March 16th, 2012, to attend the Cable Executive Management at Harvard Business School from June 10th to the 15th in Boston. There will be three diversity fellowship recipients, and the application can be obtained from CTAM Educational Foundation Manager Janine Candless at janine@ctam.com. The fellowships are underwritten by HBO, Showtime Networks, and the CTAM Educational Foundation. CTAM will notify the three winners and all other applicants by March 22nd. You can find out more about those fellowships by going to www.ctam.com. So as I said earlier, we've got Brenna McDonough coming on, and I see that she has joined us. Hi, Brenna. How's everything out there in Las Vegas?
Hi, William. Everything's great here.
Okay. How's the weather out there?
Oh, it's about 63 and really sunny.
Oh, okay. That's nice. That's nice.
Yeah.
A lot nicer than it is here. It was kind of we had a little bit of rain and a little bit of sleet last night, and it wasn't too pleasant.
Yeah.
So, tell me about your upcoming class with Sean Pratt.
Oh, yeah. Sean Pratt and I are going to be team teaching a class. He will teach his master's in marketing to actors. I don't know, I'm sure people who are listening know that Sean is an incredibly good actor, but also an excellent teacher in terms of getting the information out there about how to promote yourself and to market your career. So I'm pretty excited about that. And I will be teaching my improv for commercials class the other half of the day. I believe that improvisation is the foundation of all performance, and if you can sharpen up your improv skills, it will make your auditions so much more authentic and make you more hireable.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I think it all starts with improv, really.
Yeah. Oh, it absolutely does, because many times you'll get to an audition and they won't have a script, so they'll just describe a scene and, you know, see how animated and how lively and how, well, just how connected you can be to the information that they give you, how spontaneous what you come up with in terms of your own creative properties. Anyway, the class is going to be Sunday, February 26th.
Okay.
Yeah, all day. So Sean, half of the day, and me, the other half of the day, and it'll be at my studio in Kensington.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. What's the address there?
It's 4275 Howard Avenue in Kensington, Maryland, which is just off the Beltway. It's suburban Bethesda, Silver Spring area.
Okay. Yeah, I've taken classes there. I just want to make sure that our listeners out there, if they've never been there, you need to go. It's well worth it.
You need to go,
trip.
And it's a little hard to find the first time because our door is at the back of the building.
Right, yeah.
So that's a little hard to find the first time, and GPS doesn't always get there, but it is on my site, which is oncameratraining.com.
Yeah, I've been there before at night, and it sort of can be kind of hard to find there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So tell me about your teleprompter class.
Teleprompter class is going to be Sunday, February 19th, 2 o'clock to 5. Teleprompter, if you don't have in your skill set, is really, really handy. It's a technique you can learn in the day. If you can read, you can do teleprompter. What you want to learn in class is how to look comfortable while you're doing it as if you're not reading from a teleprompter. So we go through a variety of scripts, and everybody takes a turn four or five times during the day, and we do playback evaluation so you can see what you want to improve. And by the time you leave at the end of the day, you can add that skill set to your resume.
Wow. Yeah, I've taken that class. This has been a while since I've taken it. But what do you think is really the secret to that? Is it just practice, or is it, what's the secret there?
The secret
appearing
is,
natural.
Yeah, appearing natural. So speaking at a believable pace, not hurrying, fixing your eyes on you know, the teleprompter is mounted on the camera, so it's as if you're looking and talking to somebody that you know, which, you know, there's a naturalness to that. When we look at a friend and we're talking to a friend, we're not staring and our body isn't locked in a position. We're breathing, we're relaxing, we look away and gather our thoughts. We might come back and speak directly to the camera. It's just a matter of creating naturalness in your delivery.
Yeah, because, you know, sometimes it's... I have a stage background, and sometimes for me it's kind of hard to relate to a machine. But, I mean, over the years,
okay,
I've gotten better. Sort of,
well,
you really got to get it to your imagination.
Well, and I think, you know, if you can just dispel the fact that it's a camera, that it is a machine, and you imagine talking to somebody that you know and creating some conversational reality around the script, you know, that's where the actor has to come in and be playful and use their imagination. We can see that it's a machine. We have to imagine it as a human heartbeat or any kind of heartbeat. Sometimes people can talk to their dog and get that same sense of confidence and comfort.
Yeah, it's just all comes back to imagination.
Yeah. Well, what do you imagine when you're using a teleprompter? Do you just stand and stare, or do you just breathe and kind of get into the conversational aspects of it?
Well, of course, I know I'm supposed to get into the conversational aspect of it. I try to imagine friends and family members.
Sure.
And try to, and the thing with me, it takes a little bit of time to get there. I mean, sometimes it's hard to kind of get it the first take. Sometimes it's, you know, I have to kind of work up to it a little bit.
Well, I always remind people that when you're doing a job, you'll get more than one chance to rehearse it before they roll tape and actually record one. Because you'll have to, you know, walk through the blocking if there is any, and you'll have a chance to rehearse it like that. And chances are you've seen the script even before you've gone to your job, so you're familiar with it. And it's just a matter of rehearsing once or twice, or maybe even you get three rehearsals to, you know, iron out any of the lighting cues or any of the blocking. So you're never going to get to a job, hit the mark, and they'll say, go, you get one take. I mean, in the many years that I've been doing this, that's never happened.
Yeah, I think a lot of us performers put a lot of pressure on ourselves, and that and one thing you taught me that, you know, at the beginning of the audition, you talk really fast, and it's like slow down because you'll probably speed up as you go through it. As you go through the audition,
yes.
People tend to get nervous and they speak faster and faster and faster.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
We always pick up speed as we're delivering, and you know, if we can just regulate our pace and remember
right.
where we are, and it's to stay in our body. It makes a lot of difference.
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, so many auditions have been lost because people just couldn't take their time.
It's happened to me too, William, trust me.
Yeah.
Where an audition will be over and I'm on my way out of the room and I think, oh my gosh, it's all over. And it's over because I went so quickly. So I've trained myself to slow down.
Yes, absolutely. You got to slow down. You've
uh-huh.
got to slow down. Tell me about your masterclass.
Masterclass is coming up at the end of the month. That's on a Monday night. Most of my classes are either a Saturday morning or a Tuesday evening class. But the masterclass is held on Monday nights in case there are theater people who want to take a class. Because
uh-huh.
as we know, most theaters are dark on Monday nights. So the masterclass is similar to the basic class, but there's more emphasis on the improvised audition. Where we start class with an exercise, an improv exercise. I'll give you an imagined experience, and you create a scene around that in 15 to 30 seconds. And then we work with a piece of copy that the exercise could apply to, the exercise that we've already done earlier in the class. So it's a pretty interesting class. And all my classes are, we record and we do playback and evaluation. And as you might remember, you can criticize your own work. You can't criticize your neighbor's work. But I also really want people to focus on what they're doing well. Because when they see what they're not doing well, they can get rid of that a lot more easily if they can also remind themselves of what they are doing well.
Right. That's right. Hmm. Let's backtrack a little bit and talk about how you got into the business.
Well, I started in Chicago. Many, many years ago, Chicago is my hometown, and my sister, who is younger than I am, but had started on a singing career in Chicago, was called in on an audition. She was out in California at that time doing a recording, and my mom said, well, my mother is also an actress, and so the agent called our home. Yeah, my mom was an actress, and my folks had a theater in my hometown of Crystal Lake, Illinois.
Oh.
So my sister Meg got called for an audition, and my mother, you know, took the call because Megan was only 17, I think, at the time. And Mom said, "Well, Megan's not here, but I'll send Brenna." And she didn't tell me that part, so I was just, you know, kind of hanging out at home. So I went to the audition, and I met an agent, and this agent said to me, you know, asked me my name, and then she told me I looked like my mom, blah blah blah, and she said, "I'd like you to come and see me tomorrow." So I went back into the city and saw her, and she said, "I'd like you to sign exclusively with my agency." So,
wow.
William, I think it was a combination of being in the right place at the right time for me. It was a long time ago. Now, it was 9 months before I booked my first commercial.
Right.
And I went to auditions all the time. I did anything my agent told me to do. If she wanted me to work in convention at McCormick Place and pass out plastic bags, I did that. I also had a full-time singing job at night for, I think, my first 6 years in the business. So my singing job sort of financed my acting classes and things like that. And it also left me free to do auditions during the day.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great. It was a great experience. And that agent I communicated with, and that was in 1973, and I sent her a Christmas card every year because I moved to New York eventually. I sent her a Christmas card every year, and she just passed away this past year. So we had a long, long relationship.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that is
and
a
then
long relationship.
Then in 1981, I moved to New York to study at Circle in the Square because I wanted bigger things to happen in my career. So
right.
That's pretty much, that's the short version of, you know, but I, you know, it was mostly commercials, corporate videos in Chicago, some theater, singing in, you know, with different bands at night. And just going to acting class.
Wow. Wow, yeah. That's great. That's fantastic. So tell me how you got into coaching, teaching.
You know, we moved to Washington. My husband is also an actor, and we moved to Washington in 1989 because he just didn't want to raise our children in New York. So we moved down here because he had done an awful lot of theater at the National Theater, and he thought Washington would be a good place to live. So after we'd been here about 5 years, someone said to me, you know, you ought to really think about teaching a class. And I thought, so in other words, teaching and coaching was never my idea. Someone came to me with the idea, and I thought, well, maybe I could do that. So I put together a, you know, a class synopsis, and a syllabus, and just found a place, a studio in Kensington, and I've been there 15 years. So I share my studio space with a photographer and a graphic artist.
That's a very interesting space.
Yeah, well, because it's a photo studio.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff going on there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like it. I dig it.
Yeah, thanks. It's
Tell
really
me about
nice.
Your book.
Well, my husband and I wrote a book a few years ago. Again, not my idea. someone had said to him, he was doing Sweeney Todd at the time, and the woman who was playing Mrs. Lovett said, well, you know, your wife has a studio and teaches classes, and sometimes when John is around, he'll teach a class with me. She said, why don't you guys write a book? And it literally never occurred to me. And so John said, okay, that sounds like a great idea. He is more detail-oriented than I am. He imagined what chapters he thought would be pertinent for actors to know, and he told me which ones he thought I should write, and I sat down and did my part, and he sat down and did his part, and we submitted it to, I think we submitted it to 5 publishers, and we got 2 offers, so that felt great, and our book is out. It's 10 years old now, but Heinemann is our publisher, and I still have the book, and it's on Amazon as well, so it's called You Can Work on Camera. And it's what we heard is that it's a great book for beginners, but it's also for the seasoned professional who might want to sharpen up their skills.
You know, I use that book to this day. I like in the back of it, it has the examples of different commercials.
Practice copy.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
The practice copy. I love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is helpful, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Good. I'm glad you got your money's worth, William.
Well, that's the name of the game.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
So I believe that some years ago you said that out in Pittsburgh you were going to do a movie with Russell Crowe. Did that ever come off?
Oh. Yeah, it did. It's called The Next 3 Days.
Uh-huh.
And he and I had a scene toward the end of the movie together.
Mm.
So that was pretty... pretty exciting, and that was, we shot that in Pittsburgh.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So how was he to work with?
He was wonderful. We didn't have a whole lot of time together. I rehearsed several times with his stand-in, who
mm-hmm.
has been with him for about 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then he and I did the scene a couple of times. We rehearsed it once. And they rewrote a couple of words, and he was just very helpful and very, really on task. He knew what he was there for. There wasn't a whole lot of chatting him up or a lot of free time, you know. But he made a suggestion, and I can't remember specifically what it was because it's a couple of years ago now, about a line. And he just reminded me of a really giving actor and someone who was really connected to what they were doing. And he was all business. All business, but not in an unfriendly way, just in a really professional way.
Was there a certain intensity or a killer instinct that you saw in him that you don't see in typical actors?
I didn't see much of a killer, but when you're working with another actor and I was, you know, inches away from him,
right.
I'm pretty big on making eye contact. So, you know, looking into somebody's eyes is a very intense an intimate experience. So our scene was brief, but I would say I got a good sense of intensity from him, because he's at that point, he's in the throes of trying to save his wife from going to prison.
Mm-hmm.
So he already was amped up in terms of the intensity.
Mm.
But I also think that that's part of his professional delivery. He's a serious, intense guy. But I think on the flip side of that, he probably plays pretty intensely too. I think, you know, when he's not working, he probably likes to just enjoy life with the same intensity. That was my impression.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I haven't seen the movie. What was your role?
I played the wife. I played the mother of his wife's best friend, where his son is at a birthday party at my house.
Okay.
Yeah, it's called The Next 3 Days, and they shot it mostly in Pittsburgh. I think it was Elizabeth Banks. I'm not sure, but Olivia Wilde played my daughter. And now, just because someone plays your daughter doesn't mean that you get to hang out with them, because her scenes were all shot on a day different than my scene was shot.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Well, so it seems like in film, I guess you don't have that continuity like you do a theater where it's like a little team.
Right.
I guess it's very pieced together.
Yeah, they might shoot the final scene in the first 3 or 4 days.
Right.
You know, it's out of sequence. As a matter of fact, I do know that there was one movie that Robert Redford directed years ago called Ordinary People, and it was shot in sequence, and that was very, very unusual. But it's shot in Chicago, and in suburban Chicago, when I was living there. So I remember that, because everybody was marveling that it was shot in sequence.
Wow.
And that's like a play, because a play evolves in sequence.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what other major motion pictures have you had parts in?
Oh, well, I had a small part in the Chris Rock movie, Head of State.
The Head of State?
Yeah. And did a little reporter in Enemy of the State, all these of state movies, with Will Smith. There was a movie, an indie movie that the producers of Blair Witch Project did last year. It was called The Possession, but I think the final movie was called something else. I can't remember that. But that was a really fun movie to work on. Because the scene that I was in was a wedding reception scene, a wedding at the church, at this beautiful old historic church near Hagerstown. And then a wedding reception, which was just so much fun, you know?
Mm.
And the unusual thing about that, I'd never done a movie like this before. I'd never worked like this before in any way. But when we drove up to the church, we had to be dressed in whatever we thought our character would be wearing to this wedding, because there was nobody there to pick your wardrobe out, which happens when you do most jobs. You bring a selection of 3 or 4 outfits, and then the stylist or the director will pick what you're going to wear. This was completely different. We were to wear whatever we thought was appropriate, and as soon as we got out of the car, we were already in the movie. So there were about 4, 5, maybe 6 people holding cameras and just shooting lots and lots of footage. So how they edited it, I don't know, and I didn't go to the screening of it in Hagerstown. But but as soon as you stepped out of the car, you were in the movie.
Wow.
You know, they knew what time you were going to arrive, and they go, oh, yeah, well, this is the mother of the bride over here, and, you know, isn't it a beautiful day, the cameraman would say, and you just respond to the camera. It was wild and crazy and so much fun.
Wow, sounds like it.
Yeah, talk about improvising your scenes.
Yeah. Wow. Let's talk about actors who are starting out. Start with talking about auditions. Young actors starting out auditioning. What advice would you give them to give an effective audition every time?
We touched on a little bit earlier. Take your time. take your time, get as much information as you can about what your character is going to be, and dress in something that's appropriate and comfortable for you.
Uh-huh.
Remember, they're not auditioning wardrobe, they're auditioning you. So if you get there and you think, gee, I wore the wrong thing, don't bother your mind with something like that. Just go,
right.
Get the script if they haven't already sent it to you. Take your time and see if you can connect with whatever is on the page in an authentic way. I think it's really important that actors, whether they're experienced or just starting out, are in class. You know, or at least in the company of other like-minded people. I think that's really critically important. We have our daughter's up in New York working as an actor, and, you know, she's in class one night a week, and she'd probably be in class more if she could afford it. But she said it makes so much difference when she goes to her auditions, because she feels like she's keeping her skills sharp.
Right.
You know, because we don't work. I mean, I don't work every day. I don't have an on-camera job every day. I don't have a voiceover job every day. So how do I stay sharp? I stay sharp by hanging around with other like-minded people and going
right.
to class. Yeah. But I think it's most important to take your time to arrive at your auditions 15 minutes early so you don't feel rushed. Because if you feel rushed, then you're going to hurry.
Mm.
So take your time.
That's
take
right.
Time at, you know, and do something positive for your career every day, whether it's reading something positive or, you know, just practicing or going to class. Those are all positive aspects of your career.
Right, exactly. What books would you recommend young actors read?
Well,
besides yours.
Well, thank you, besides mine. Well, you know, there are a lot of good books out there. I remember Tony Barr, Acting for the Camera. That was a pretty good book. But you know what, William? I don't necessarily think you have to read an acting book to get information. I think you can read other positive books. Right now I'm reading Diane Keaton's book, and I like to read about other actors and what they went through in order to reach their goals.
That's a good point.
Yeah. And so I think many books we can read to, and we can apply them to acting.
Right. Part of the lessons. I mean, like I was reading one on Bogart not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
I read one on Cary Grant several years ago. It's
mm-hmm.
very, you learn some interesting tidbits.
Yeah. And, you know, it wasn't easy for everybody starting out. And, you know, you want to determine your level of involvement in the industry. Some people in our area just work at it part-time. Some people work at it full-time. Some people commute between New York and Washington. Some people are determined to be big stars. Some people just want to be working actors, you know. And you can kind of craft that for yourself when you figure out what it is you want to do and, you know, how active you want to be in it. Some women are in it for a little while, take some time off to have their family, get back into it later. You know, there's a number of ways to do it. Some people do theater and on-camera work. Some people do theater, and then they have a daytime job, you know, as an accountant. There are many ways to approach it.
Well, Brenna, we're kind of running short on time. I want to thank you for this wonderful interview. I think you've given us a lot of great tips, and I really appreciate you coming on tonight.
Thanks. I'm always happy to answer questions, so if anybody visits my site, they can get my email address and let me know if there's anything I can answer for them.
Okay. Hey, that sounds fantastic.
Thanks.
Okay. Hey,
thank you,
thanks Heather. Again. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Have a great
Bye
night.
Now. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And I want to encourage all of my listeners out there to do something for their career every day and break a leg.